But that still requires the founders to come in and pitch them, even if it's a complex product, which oftentimes I find is even more challenging to take something so complex and be able to explain it to somebody in a way that they can simply understand it.
Well, that's the first litmus test. If it doesn't have an aha or a so what for anyone, I don't care how technical they are, it has to have some value, and that's the first litmus test, right?
Great.
If there's no economic value, or if there's no productivity value, or if there's no shifting change to a current marketplace, then why just invest in technology?
Welcome to The Successful Pitch, where we interview startups who have received funding, as well as investors who share their criteria for what makes a winning pitch, with your host, author, and funding strategist, John Livesay.
Welcome to The Successful Pitch. Today's guest is David Rosen, the CEO of TechX Foundry. He is all about what's going on in innovation. In fact, he won Innovator of the Year around robotics, drones, and 3D printers. David talks about the need to really figure out which way are you going to manage your company. Is it through the product? Is it through the process that you're going to do, like what your culture is and what customer satisfaction is? Or is it customer-centric and focused that way? When you can explain that to an investor, you automatically are able to set yourself apart from the other founders that are pitching. He said, you know, you really need to have an aha moment or a so what moment. That's the first litmus test when you're pitching. And what he does is help innovators innovate by saving them time and money. Enjoy the episode. Are you a founder struggling with your investor pitch? Do you need warm introductions to the right investors to get your startup funded? Do you need a funding roadmap to get you there fast? All of this and more can be found in Crack the Funding Code. Judy Robinette, best-selling author of How to Be a Power Connector and on the board of Illuminate Ventures, and I invite you to our free Crack the Funding Code webinar. Simply go to Judy Robinette, JudyRobinette.com, and click on the webinar tab to see how to tap into our network of investors around the world. There's a link in the show notes as well. You're only one click away from getting funded fast. Hi, and welcome to the Successful Pitch Podcast. Today's guest is David Rosen, who's the CEO of TechX Foundry, which was founded in 2013. And TechX is all about creating startup teams to build the most advanced innovation center for designing, prototyping new tech hardware systems and software. I think there's probably a great story in there about robotics. But David also concurrently does something where he won Innovator of the Year for receiving awards for National Manufacturing Day. So we're definitely going to want to hear about that. And as if that's not enough, he also is involved with a company called Acrylic Group, where he's been providing leadership and coaching development, helping people get funded and knowing what is involved with M&A transactions. He sits on the board of more than 5 advisory boards and developed critical mass to get a company from 5 to 10 million to over 100 million in 5 years. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I appreciate being here and look forward to our discussion.
Yes. I always like to find out, how did someone like you get started? I mean, you've done so many amazing things, and you know, you've also been involved with Signal Lake, which is an advisor to them, to a VC. Did you know when you were in college that this is where you wanted to end up, or was it a happy accident?
You know, I kind of just connected one opportunity to the next throughout my career, but I'm kind of a bootstrapper, and I've worked since I was 11 and a half years old without working papers.
Child labor, yeah, right?
So I've always worked, and I've been very fortunate and very lucky. I grew up in the Midwest in a farm town without any real network connections. I just had a good family and good parents who kind of told me I could do whatever I wanted to as long as I worked hard. So,
how great is that? You know, you can never underestimate the value of being told at a young age to believe in yourself.
Yeah, it's I was very lucky where they told me to believe in myself, but they also gave me the foundation to actually test that out, as opposed to a little bit of overpraising, which I think can actually end up putting you in the wrong direction. you think you can do anything but don't understand that it takes work, that can be more challenging than having to work for it. But
right.
So, yeah, I've been working, and I've gotten very lucky. I've worked for some great people in my life, and I started working even when I was in college. I worked my last 2 years full time because I was at Boston University, but then worked at Harvard, where I was kind of an IT guru, helping the internal IT department put in PCs and systems to the various schools and colleges at Harvard.
Wow.
I found myself in the middle of all that.
What an exciting place to be. Harvard and the beginning of the internet. That's great. So what is it like? Let's just jump right into one of these many jobs that you have. What's it like being the advisor to Signal Lake, which is a venture capital? What kinds of things do you see that they look for when people pitch them? What makes them stand out from other VCs?
Well,
any insights you can give on that would be really interesting.
Yeah. What I like about Signal Lake, John, is I sold my last software company. I started a SaaS software company back in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an enterprise application for marketing and inside sales and sales. And so I had to cut my teeth on really before AWS and a lot of the cloud services were there. We had to figure out how to provision our software in the cloud with our own tools and technologies, but also use my foundation of understanding of how large companies like to buy. And so after I sold that software company about 3.5 years ago, I started looking at what to do next. And I ran into Bart Stuck, who was one of the founders of Signal Lake. And, you know, Bart is a very interesting former Bell Labs thinker and very strong technical guy. And in my career, I've been involved in hardware and software evaluations and valuations and assessments.
Mm-hmm.
Signal Lake is very technical in how they look at companies. They're not looking at viral software application plays as much as they are looking for new industrial solutions to bring to market.
Hmm. So they're very specific, it sounds like.
Well, they're very specific, and they don't mind looking at the potential that comes from highly complex technologies or products that are typically not consumer-driven but more industrial-driven.
Hmm, interesting. But that still requires the founders to come in and pitch them, even if it's a complex product, which oftentimes I find is even more challenging to take something so complex and be able to explain it to somebody in a way that they can simply understand it.
Well, that's the first litmus test. If it doesn't have an aha or a so what for anyone, I don't care how technical they are, it has to have some value, and that's the first litmus test, right?
Mm, great.
If there's no economic value, or if there's no productivity value, or if there's no shifting change to a current marketplace, then why just invest in technology?
That's great. And so many people fall so in love with their product that they don't know how to talk about anything else, including themselves. What are some of the qualities you think investors look for in founders? And what qualities did you have when you were an entrepreneur that has led to your success?
You know, there's three ways to look at managing a company. You can manage a company for its product. You can manage a company for its process,
mm-hmm.
or you can manage a company for its customers.
Mm.
And usually a company chooses one of those three dimensions to dominate how they think about their business.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you've got a product or a technology-driven company, you still have to think about it from the process or customer perspective, but you're trying to differentiate yourself based upon beating out the functionality and features of another solution.
Mm-hmm.
But it still requires an understanding of the customer. And my bias is always bringing the customer viewpoint in as opposed to looking at things from an internal perspective. You know,
I just want to talk about that for a second, because it's such an important point you brought up, David, which is you know, if a company's focused on engineering leading the way as opposed to being more marketing focused, then the engineers keep developing things and telling the marketing and salespeople, go sell this. And the salespeople are saying, well, the customers don't need it or want it. But so there's all that conflict going on. So you're saying, you know, if you listen to your customers before you add bells and whistles or develop something completely new, it's a much easier way to manage your company, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, the customer is always king in my mind. So I tend to focus more on customers before I focus on technology and product. And, you know, in my early days of my career, IBM might not have had the best solution from a technical perspective, but the way they marketed it for their customers, they always ensured that they made it clear about what their value proposition was.
Right. I used to sell against IBM in the early 80s with AMDAL and Control Data. And I remember their acronym FUD, Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt. If you bought anything that wasn't IBM, they would point fingers and blame the other vendor. So they, you know, they ruled and got people to buy for a lot of a variety of reasons besides the product.
You're exactly right, John. And, you know, the reality was the saying used to be, you wouldn't get fired by going with IBM.
Right. And now, of course, I don't think anybody really has that kind of dominance anymore. But what's the second one? Let's talk about your second way to manage your company, which is process. Describe to us the pros and cons of that.
Well, that's where you distinguish yourselves based upon how you go to market.
Mm.
It might be your culture of service. It might be your customer satisfaction. It might be the way you approach the market. McDonald's is a great example of a process-oriented business. They have you thinking and they ensure that they deliver so that when you go to a McDonald's in Tokyo or you go to a McDonald's in Burma or you go to a McDonald's in Chicago, that the burger is, you know, their burger is always the same, their service is always the same, mm-hmm. and their food is always consistent. And that's from a very strong process orientation.
Got it. Starbucks is another example, I think, that does that worldwide.
Yeah.
It's great. All right. So we have either being product focused, process focused, and then, of course, customer focused, which is all about making the customer right. I would think, would Amazon be an example of a customer process or based way to manage?
Yeah, they're very effective at their process as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they really mine the data of their customers to anticipate or to target mm-hmm. which customers are going to be likely consumers of something next.
Yes. If you like this, you'll like that. Well, I think just you giving us this insight, David, is so valuable. I've done many interviews and you're the first person to spell it out like this. And so for the listeners, the big takeaway is, before you go pitch for an investor, figure out which of these three ways you're going to manage your company so that you can articulate it to the investors and they get a sense of what your culture is and is not, right?
Exactly. I think, you know, having clarity about which of those three is going to provide your success is very critical to your future as well.
Because what I hear time and time again from investors is, we really look to see how a founder thinks and are they flexible? And so having these things thought out makes you stand out against all the other pitches they hear, don't you think?
Yes, I absolutely agree.
Well, let's hear about you winning Innovator of the Year. First of all, congratulations, and tell us what that was like and what did you innovate?
Thank you. You know, I feel a little bit like Obama when he got the Nobel Peace Prize 2 weeks into the job.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, okay, now I have to innovate on something.
Mm.
No, it's actually what's interesting and what's been very what's been driving me over the past few years is after I sold my last software company, I tried to figure out what to do next. And what mm-hmm. I found was a growing increase in the investments going into tech hardware companies because I think there's a lot of people out there with app fatigue, and that software isn't the only option going forward. And between the you know, 4 or 5 mega trends out there, from the economics of manufacturing in the U.S. and, you know, manufacturing close to demand as opposed to manufacturing close to supply and raw materials and low cost labor, that there's an opportunity to reshore manufacturing, because we're the U.S. is still the largest demanding country in the world, as far as I know. And the fact that personalization and the demand for more unique products, as opposed to I want one of the 5 million black cell phones that are being made. People want a phone with their own picture on their back and a green ring around a red button. That drive and demand for personalization is therefore driving the need and demand for micro manufacturing, which plays right into smaller volumes, mean an opportunity to manufacture again locally and closer to the consumer with more personalized products. So all these things are coming together around localized manufacturing. And what I'm addressing is going after those opportunities, trying to make sure we're not going to miss the next revolution in technology, hardware systems, and software manufacturing. You know, John, I can tell when you and I were growing up, we thought of IT jobs as the white collar jobs of IT as our nirvana and where the U.S. was going to be going, correct?
Yes. You know,
we all felt that was our wave and that's what we were going to be good at. And in fact, during that period of time from the 80s, from 1986 to today, manufacturing companies in New Jersey, as just one example, went from 115,000 manufacturers located in New Jersey to less than 13,000 today. And so those kinds of numbers are indicative that, yes, we were going to be an IT culture and we didn't want to do manufacturing, so we relegated it to offshore options. What, you know, what's led, you know, if we look at how we outsource our IT today, probably more than 50% of our IT is outsourced, right?
Right. And so, everyone thinks they can get it done cheaper, less labor costs. And that brings up a really great point, which is a lot of people think, well, I don't need to have my tech CEO with me here in America. I can outsource that. And I keep hearing from investors that they do not like that.
Yeah. Well, so you're absolutely right. It's you know, so at some point in time, people have been outsourcing beyond the flesh and into the bone, which is a difficult thing to do. I know that's a terrible analogy, but...
No, I get it. Let's jump back to what you were saying about personalization, which is what you won this Innovator of the Year award for. Right. You know, I recently went to a Nike store, and they allow you to customize your shoe on the computer. You know, what color laces do you want? And right. And then while you're, you know, and doing all that at the right at the store level, talk about getting people to come into the store versus buying it online. And then while you wait, that all magically happens. So you walk out with a pair of, with, you know, your name on the tongue of your shoe, if that's what you want. It's amazing to see how that really is a big, big part of the trend in the future, I think.
Exactly right. And that's why I started TechX Foundry, because I believe that if you look at the investment dollars from CB Insights, you'll see that the market for hardware investments is growing faster now than the software investment marketplace. And so if you also look at the new trends, it's New York is now the second largest market for investments in the world, next to San Francisco or the West Coast. And it's right. Massachusetts is now number 3. So the New York metropolitan area where I'm located is ripe with the money backing from New York, but very few companies, especially tech hardware companies, can afford to be located in Manhattan. especially now that the average cost of a condominium or the average, the average sale of a house in New York is well over $1 million again as the recovery's turned in, right?
Right. Well, there's three areas that you do at TechX that I'm completely fascinated by and would love to have you talk about each one a little bit if you wouldn't mind. One is robotics. The second is 3D printing. And the third is tech fashion.
Right.
So pick whichever one you want to start with and tell us a little bit about what you're doing with those.
Well, so there's a common thread here. And the common thread, John, is that all of the applications, whether it's robots that are being integrated, robots and autonomous vehicles and even drones are all solving the same problems, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to interpret what's in front of them in order to function and to do something, to accomplish something. They all need to sense whether something's in the way or something needs to be moved, and to know that a piece of grass is something to be avoided if you're flying or if you're driving.
Right.
And so robotics and autonomous vehicles, they're all multidisciplinary functions that integrate with software that have to, that are just going to grow in terms of number of opportunities out in the marketplace. And so all these things require an ability to pull together everything from metalworking and woodworking to plastic molding and plastic forming to electronics and sensors and devices that sense things and tell a machine that's moving to move away from it or to grab something that may be necessary. And so what we're doing with TechX Foundry is enabling people to have access to all those tools and technologies in a gym membership kind of model where you have to pay for the capital costs of that equipment. So if you're starting a robotics company today, you typically are going to need $250,000 or $500,000 in technology equipment to get that business off the ground into upwards of millions of dollars. And what we're doing is we're helping inventors and innovators and startup companies have access to those tools and technologies and eliminate those capital costs.
So basically helping innovators innovate.
Helping innovators innovate, but they can do it without capital cost. They're going to do it much faster than doing it offshore, because the other problem and challenge that we've heard from a lot of technology hardware companies is that they have 3-week turnarounds from a design review before they get their next iteration or prototype iteration
right.
back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you consider that you've got 6 or 10 iterations before you come up with a prototype that you can validate,
mm-hmm.
that's potentially a half a year delay of time to cash or time to market
yeah.
that you're missing because you're going offshore.
That's lost revenues. That's competitive market share. There's all kinds of issues that you're fixing there.
Exactly. First to market, all those issues. So one, minimizing capital is an important aspect for a tech hardware company. Two, minimizing the amount of time it takes to develop a prototype is critical. The other thing is when you prototype offshore, you're also losing out on the knowledge gained during the process of prototyping. So if you are, and I know one of the 3D printer companies is experiencing this today, because they Solid Doodle made its first product here in the U.S., and they went to their version 2 and they made it outside the U.S., and they're subjected to a 6-month delay because the manufacturer that they were working with had, one, some problems, and two, a much larger customer came in and consumed the manufacturing space for their products and put the other thing on hold. So here you are with an order of 10,000 units, and you're now working with somebody who just got a big order from somebody, 10 to 50 times your size, and you just got pushed aside to get that order done for the other customer. You've got 2,000 out of your 10,000 units, and you're told, tough luck, it's going to take a while.
Right.
Wow. Manufacture locally, people don't know that there's a lot of local people who can help, whether they're in Massachusetts or whether they're in New Jersey or whether they're in Ohio or Indiana. ton of companies that the ones that have survived in manufacturing are very good at what they do and very efficient at what they do. They just don't market themselves well, so you don't know how to go find them. And that's part of what needs to happen in terms of innovating that supply chain. And I'm bringing the story back around to innovation and, you know, my innovation.
I love it.
Award.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to not answer that directly, but how I got there is part of the reason why I got that award, because I'm starting to bring more companies into local manufacturers who are having successes on developing products locally and mitigating their risk, reducing the capital to market, and increasing their time to market, which are three important aspects for any tech hardware startup or any innovator inventor who wants to get a product to market. And
those are such great lessons for everybody to keep in mind when you're pitching to get funded or running your own business. It's really, really helpful.
And how you're managing those three things as well, right?
Oh, yes, yes. It's all about execution. That's the other big thing that investors seek all the time. And do you have any suggestions on how to prove to potential investors that you and your team are the right people to execute an idea?
You know, that's a very good question. And I don't want to sound pedantic or rote, but, you know, sometimes you find startup teams that of people who have barely had to manage their lunch money as their biggest responsibility before they start their companies, right?
Right.
So when you take a team of two people and you now ask them to add a third person to the equation, sometimes that becomes one of the most difficult challenges. And that's where startups and founders have to really step aside and understand what are they truly bringing to the table in their startups. Because, you know, it's one thing to have great inspiration and perspiration to bring something to market, but at some point in time, you've got to divide and conquer, and you've got to collaborate. And we're not always being brought up in a collaborative atmosphere today.
Right.
And I'm...
Well, you can't do everything yourself. So, and almost everybody brings, you know, passion and inspiration and sweat equity. So you need to differentiate yourself with your skill sets being complementary. Exactly. That's what you're saying.
And, you know, the other thing for a startup team is to always put your ego aside. And that's very hard to do when part of what's gotten you to where you are today is your persistence and strength in belief.
Well, it's confidence without arrogance is the way I like to look at it.
I think that's a perfect way to put it, John.
Okay, great. David, is there any book that you would recommend founders to read, either about business or even life?
You know, I wish I was as a bootstrapper, I haven't always been the most academic. And yet I've been able to go at par with some of the top academics in the world and have some really strong debates and conversations. But, you know, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One is Lean Startup.
Yes.
I've spent half of my career advising the Tech 200, Tech 300. And so I've adapted to the phased gate array investment processes that are put into place. And I bring, again, more of a market viewpoint to that strategic thinking in terms of identifying new markets for large companies to get into or for different ways to look at the portfolio of businesses that they have and figure out which ones belong and which ones don't belong. But at the same time, you know, lean thinking and the lean startup is starting to really break through the new ways of working and bringing technology businesses to market. I sat down with the CTO of GE Appliances about a month and a half ago, and GE is one of the founders of the 9-box and the strategic thinking methods that have been ingrained in companies for many years, right?
Right.
And they now have partnered with a makerspace because they realize that the 24-phase gate array process of going from a good idea to marketplace has to be changed and radicalized.
Wow, if GE needs to partner and collaborate, everybody does, is what I'm getting.
Exactly. I mean, they had one of, you know, the CTO said, why are my engineers spending time between 5 o'clock and 3 a.m. working at this makerspace across the street from us? And what they found was that one of their engineers devised a new product that could be applied to their refrigerators and was able to crowdfund $250,000 for that new product to make, I think it was square ice cubes. And he said, you know what? I'm not going to care about the intellectual property, and I'm going to give this engineer a royalty for bringing this product to market, and we're going to add this product to our product line. Now, that's not the E I knew of the past.
No, I love it. What a great story to end on. You know, it's all about collaboration and innovation, and the desire to make a difference and express yourself will keep us all at the forefront of leading interesting and creative and successful lives.
And that new thinking and new ways to identify new products and bring them to the market quickly, good value propositions behind them, and testing them through crowdfunded methods or other methods is going to be a more pervasive way to look at product innovation, even for the largest companies.
Fantastic. David, how can people follow you on social media? What's your Twitter handle?
I'm at David A. Rosen at Twitter. I'm at David A. Rosen on Facebook. We're at TechX Foundry, company/TechX Foundry in LinkedIn. I'm at David A. Rosen on LinkedIn and at techxfoundry.com on the web.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you for sharing your innovation and your insights. You are quite an inspiration to everybody.
Thank you, John. I hope I wasn't too inspirational, but I'm very passionate about what I do, and I'm very... I'm very lucky to be around some great people and watching a new revolution of what I think is manufacturing 4.0, which is going to drive a lot of great opportunities for U.S. manufacturers to go to market in the U.S. and to take their products elsewhere.
I'm excited to see what the robots and the 3D printers bring to all of us. Thanks again, David.
Thanks, John. Be well.
You too. Thanks for listening to the Successful Pitch Podcast. If you like the show, please go to iTunes and write a review, and encourage your friends to write reviews too. It really helps get the word out. You know, people say that the longest distance is between someone's mouth and their wallet. People can tell you they're going to invest, but when it comes time to write the check, they don't do it. So how do you get people to say yes and then follow through? Visualize yourself on the left side of a riverbank, and you have to cross the river, and on the other side of the river is where the funding happens. So first you make up your idea, then you make it real, then you make it reoccur. Once you start dipping your toe into the water to get to funding, that's where I can help. I get you across that river faster than you would on your own, with a lot less frustration than you will get when you hear a bunch of no's and you don't know why. So if you want some help getting funded faster with less frustration, go to my free funding webinar, sellingsecretsforfunding.com/webinar, and sign up and get in-depth information on how you can get funded fast. Thanks.